And we're live.
What?
Sorry about that.
Hello.
Just spring it on us like that.
Yeah, that's, well, I had troubles getting the stream going. I had some settings changed earlier for the girls podcast, which was over on YouTube. So I had to make some changes, and I fucked some things up. But now Packer game is over, and here we are live.
Woo! Packers win the Super Bowl!
Packers don't win the Super Bowl.
They do sometimes.
Well, once this century.
And once last century. That's 100% of the centuries that American football has existed in.
They won more times last century, though.
Yeah, but at least once.
Yeah, at least once.
Point is, the Packers have won every century that had American football in it.
That's a big claim.
Can't do better than every century.
No. And I'm Andy.
Nathan.
I'm Brian.
Yay.
Small crew.
Yeah.
And that's Shownuff, the Shogun of Harlem.
Yes, Shownuff, the Shogun of Harlem. So I wore this shirt to the most recent tournament that I went to was the Waukesha one, where you played against Zach, I think, in the second last round.
Yeah.
I went to the barbecue place, this southern barbecue place next door. And the moment I walked in there and took my order, the lady at the cashier recognized Shownuff, and then every single person in there, she called every cook, dishwasher, everyone to the front, and like, you got to come see this. He's got Shownuff on his shirt. So it was a pretty fun time. I enjoyed being able to bond with the next door barbecue people over my love of blaxploitation kung fu films.
Movie's so good.
It is. It's fantastic. I tried to search.
The sparkle? The shimmer?
The glow.
The glow. Thank you, God. Yep. My brain just wasn't
working. You got the glow. There was a... It had to have been 5 years ago. I must have looked this up. But the... I think his name is Tamik, the actor who played Bruce Leroy. He had set up a website, just basically a fan page for The Last Dragon, and he basically like was trying to get his rendition of The Last Dragon put on Broadway. It was that was like the pinnacle of his career, was The Last Dragon. I mean, it's a good way to start and a great way to go out.
100% of his movies have been The Last Dragon,
and that's fine. Cindy Lauper was in it. It was just great. It was a fantastic film. I loved it so much. Probably one of the best blaxploitation films out there, in my personal opinion.
Yeah. I was trying to see if it's available, streamable, but can I stream it? The website didn't even recognize it. I searched The Last Dragon, and it's like, did you mean all of this other stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
No, because I know a lot of blaxploitation films, they start out with the fact that they... The film's predecessor was, it didn't have the African American community represented in a great way or very big quantity. But I thought Enter the Dragon, one of their main characters was African American, but did he die early on? I think he was the first one to go in the tournament of the named characters.
Yeah, because there's Bruce Lee and then the white guy and the black guy.
Yep.
Which one is it that Bruce Lee fights Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Yeah, I don't know.
That was the big thing, because he's got the reach advantage, because he's 9 goddamn feet tall.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm thinking, never mind. I was thinking of Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme, because he fights against so many, like, there's that scrappy, like, fights like a monkey guy. That's who I was imposing fighting Bruce Lee. But that was not the... That's not even the same movie.
Well, fine then. I am happy that I just... I typed in Bruce, and you can see that in my autocomplete, Bruce Leroy is actually above Bruce Lee. And yep. That shows that I have trained my phone well.
But no, I think I even went... One night when I was playing... I was doing an ATC practice run at Misty, and one of the ladies there... She flipped her shit over the shirt, too.
Game of Death is the one where he fights Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Gotcha. Go on. But We probably sat and missed you for an extra half hour talking about how The Last Dragon was probably one of the better blaxploitation films out there.
Oh, like, as far as non-ironic quality, it's definitely.
Yeah.
You know, as far as something that still qualifies as blaxploitation, it's probably the best as a film.
Yeah.
Because the other shit is you go into, like, Rudy Ray Moore stuff, like Dolomite and Petey Wheatstraw and stuff like that, and those movies are just terrible.
Well, The Wiz isn't terrible.
No, The Wiz isn't terrible, and that's... I don't think The Wiz is blaxploitation.
The Wiz is also a subject of the most recent Always Sunny episode.
Yeah? Yeah. Because well, it said, yeah, they wear blackface, kind of.
No, they don't... Well, not really kind of. They turn black.
Interesting.
You have to watch the episode. We After will. We're done with this, we have to watch the episode. It is... I've watched it like three times since it showed up on Wednesday or Tuesday. It's so good.
But yeah, the problem with, in order to qualify as blaxploitation, you have to have that exploitation part, right? Like you can't be just, like Creed is just a good film where almost all of the main characters are African American. And that's different than, you know, Black Dynamite.
Yeah.
You know, that's different than Petey Wheatstraw, the Devil's Son-in-Law, or Dolomite, or any of that shit.
Well, the Black Dynamite, though, that was more of a... That was a parody of blaxploitation films, which in turn is a blaxploitation film.
Right.
But,
and maybe like my knowledge of inner-city dressing in the 80s is not super great, but the only thing that's ridiculous is our introduction to Shonuff, where he's wearing the like visored sunglasses and like the Legion of Doom-esque football pads.
No, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, I
I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka is another...
That was a good one,
yeah. ...parody of blaxploitation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the gold chains weighing everyone down.
Poor Junebug. Oh, and that's got to be Chris Rock's first film appearance.
You know,
he's got that bit part. He's the crackhead that goes into the guy's rib store... And he wants to order one rib.
Yeah, it must have been the thing that springboarded him into In Living Color.
Might be, yeah.
But I'm not familiar with Chris Rock's theatrical presence.
Got change for 100? Good stuff.
Yeah.
So we have some announcements. There's an event coming up, Champions.
Yeah, and
that's the 21st. I've been corrected multiple times. I missed out on the Milwaukee event yesterday, and I missed out on the Schofield. Well, not Schofield, but the Schofield folks put on a War Machine tournament at Evercon that I missed as well.
It'd be nice if there was something this weekend. I don't work this weekend, so I'd be able to do it.
This weekend is one of the Magic pre-releases. So Rick and I had we ran into that problem with some things we were trying to set up.
Nope, fuck that noise.
Well, I mean, like, the youth, you would think, and maybe I just...
Fuck that noise!
Between Peg and Mario. Misty, and what, Nether something?
Nether Realm.
Yeah, Nether Realm. I can't imagine, like, all of those stores are busy for a Magic pre-release, but I guess there are a lot of people in Madison, so...
That's how most of our local stores, besides I'm Bored, actually make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, for sure.
I'm sure I'm Bored actually makes money now over Star Wars.
I know that we wouldn't, in Baraboo, we wouldn't have a game store if it weren't for Magic, period, just in general. Like, board gamers and pen and paper gamers alike should thank Magic as much as I find it annoying during the schedule around their events.
Oh, they're the only reason we have game stores.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's nothing else that's brought as much income to game stores to make them support other games.
Like, anecdotally, and it can't be unique, but I know of people who own game stores, and everything else breaks even, like, barely. Like, every single penny of profit is collectible card games, and 90% of that is Magic.
Yep.
Like, the guy that I know of personally buys and sells board games just because he's a huge board game fan, and he wants people to play board games so he can play board games with them, but if he just stopped selling board games, it wouldn't affect his profit at all.
Yep, it's Magic, some stores that sell pop vinyls, and Cards Against Humanity. I think that's one of the things Baraboo always has in stock in, I think, triplicates, is everything that has to do with Cards Against Humanity, because there's always some person wandering in and buying it.
I mean, granted it is. It almost feels like it's going to be... It's kind of a gateway drug. It is that game that out of the geek mold, in a sense, where it's gone into the other world now, and unfortunately, it's not a very good game, but,
yeah.
You know, it might draw on other people into our world, in a sense.
But yeah, I can see it bringing some other games on, especially when you go into, like, other games that are kind of in that genre, too. Like, they just kind of springboard you closer to playing, like, a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess maybe. I mean,
it's not like a gateway drug like Settlers. Settlers Catan, from my understanding, is a great starter into European-style games.
Yeah, and it does feel more, you know, like, there's nothing... There is nothing... There's no Venn diagram overlap with Cards Against Humanity and any board game that I wouldn't kill myself instead of playing. There's nothing there except that the fact that it's on cards. So, like, I guess if you squint at it, maybe you could get people to jump to, like, code names or something if you tried, and then maybe get them into...
I think into other party games it will go into.
And yeah.
From those party games could eventually get into...
Yeah, those party games have an evolutionary track, too. Like, you go from Cards Against Humanity into code names, like you said, and then from there, I think there was a new game that came out recently where you basically play a dinner party murder game, like, but not Clue.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit more intense and a little bit more involved, and then that would spur you into other mystery suspense games, too.
Yeah, I just worry that anybody who actually enjoys playing against Cards Against Humanity, I just wouldn't want them ever to play a board game with me.
I can see. I really try.
It's like the same thing with, like, Munchkin. It's like, look, they're playing Munchkin. Now I can get them. Go away. Don't touch me.
Yeah.
Don't look directly at me. Just go play your shit away.
I try to be as inclusive as possible, but Munchkin is the game where I'll put my foot down. And with Cards Against Humanity, I will play it with people sometimes just to humor them, but then I always feel bad because no matter how hard I try to swallow that Brussels sprout of a game, I always piss everybody off at the end and make them want to leave because I just bitch about the game constantly. And then I go through the motions of my little speech of, like, how I try to say that all of my friends are stupid when I play Cards Against Humanity. It's just like it's just this revealing thing that happens where you're like, I think this is funny. So they'll think it's funny because we're friends. We think the same, but then you find out they don't, and that makes you think they're stupid.
Yeah.
That's the truncated version of that rant.
I don't know. I get the concept of bringing people into gaming, but on the other hand, there's two different worlds of it, right? I mean, over there, there's Monopoly and Scrabble and Cards Against Humanity, and over here are gamer games. Like, and I don't think that there's really, like, people don't jump from one to the other. To me, it's like, if you're like, oh, you know, we meet and I have this club where we watch, you know, Criterion Collection, Kurosawa films, and we watched this French film noir, blah, 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 and then this guy's a big fan of Transformers 3, so maybe he'll come join us. Well, I don't want him to join us. And that's elitist and dickish of me, I know, but that's just how I feel. Like, there's that, it's a different world. Like, it's not the same thing. I don't want the 50 Shades of Grey people in my book club. I want them to go read their shitty book. And that's wrong, but it's how I feel.
Well, it's important to at least, like, let those people in to give them a taste of things. I mean, you know, I find there's just, like, some games that you might find extremely fascinating and try and pull some of those other, like, casual gamers into because you think they might like them. But it's definitely not, like, if you say you love Cards Against Humanity and you play it every Friday fucking night, then I'm not going to automatically assume you're a bad person. But when I sit down and play... I don't know. I think Smash Up is a good transition.
Yeah, actually, that's a decent middle ground there.
Yeah, if you find that and you're bitching the whole time, then there's no way I could ever enjoy another game with you.
The only problem I have with Cards Against Humanity, I mean, it's funny for the shock value, and that's really the only thing that keeps that game going is the shock value. The reason why I don't like it that much is it's extremely subjective. You're basically... You're pinning two random things that you got into your hand together and hoping that other people think it's funny or enough to vote you the person that had the funniest.
Well, or you just drew Pac-Man guzzling cum and people laugh at that so you win.
Yep.
Here's a less Nathan's an elitist shithead way of making the point I think I was trying to make is...
I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
Cards Against Humanity is a terrible gateway into board gaming because I don't think... If I have the two of you, and I'm trying to introduce you to board gaming, and you have never played a board game in your entire life, ever,
sure,
and you've played nothing but Cards Against Humanity, I don't think that that is any more likely to get you into the gaming. I don't think it's going to help me teach you gaming. There is zero benefit to that. Especially, that's like if I'm trying to teach you guys scuba diving and you're like, I dune buggied once. Well, that's irrelevant. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make you more likely to enjoy or easier to teach or anything. It's unrelated.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
I think it's slightly related. In a way where people who are now hearing about Cards Against Humanity will venture into game stores to purchase that game. That is
where you transcend the boundary.
In which then you'll be able to see maybe there'll be some people there playing, you know, sure, like King of Tokyo or something like that.
Yeah. Or you wait for the guy who comes in that's like, I bought Cards Against Humanity for my family. And you see a bunch of mini nerds sitting there putting things together, playing them on the table. Mm-hmm. Somebody's painting something. They're like, oh, shit, I paint model cars at home. This is going to be great. It's marrying the two. But Cards Against Humanity also kind of like really debunks the whole transitional gaming thing, because 80% of the time the rules are pushed away. Nobody follows, like, there's no limit. They don't set a limit. They don't deal like another thing that makes that game so painful is like people sit there and you've got tons of hindsight bias in the game, and sometimes it gets frustrating to hear it from people when they draw a new card and it was the best one to put down for that one that I just threw away because it's new. And then you've got the throwaway rounds where you just get this garbage junk that just seems to perfectly time and harmonize with everyone at the table, where nothing makes sense, and you put that judge in this position where, like, well, I thought everybody was having fun, but this is stupid. So then you can try and burn your black cards that you've won to draw a new hand of white cards, but now it's going to take longer to finish the fucking game, and it's so frustrating. I just don't like that mechanic at all.
Yeah, I think whenever we did it, we always had... When we actually played it, a couple of years ago. We haven't really played it since then. Yeah, we usually have one random entry in there, which is, you know, like the computer, the bot.
Yeah, Londo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it'll win sometimes.
Yes.
We haven't played it since Codenames came out, because Codenames was a light enough party game. Like, it only existed because at the Christmas parties, all the gamers would come, and then people who were work friends of the host would come, and they weren't going to want to play, you know, one of the bigger, heavier games that we play, and so they would just whip out Cards Against Humanity, and the rest of us would run and hide.
Such as one person in a game which is... It sounds like it's complicated, but it literally is. If you're a good guy, you must always vote yes. If you're a bad guy, you could vote yes or no.
Mm-hmm. And this person was a good guy, so the fact that the bad guys have a choice was irrelevant. It was literally, if you're a good guy, you must vote yes.
We had somebody who couldn't handle resistance.
Yeah.
they're like, okay, so if you're a good guy, you have to vote yes. If you're a bad guy, you can choose.
Yeah.
But if you choose no, the other good guys might be able to figure out that you're a bad guy.
But it didn't even have to go that deep. It was literally, look at your card. Oh, okay, I'm looking. Okay, if it's blue, you have to vote yes.
I don't understand.
That's fine. There's a lot of things that person doesn't understand, like social constructs or basic human decency.
But with Cards Against Humanity being a more... It's more of a socialistic or social interpretation game, more so than anything. It's not about humor. It's about just thinking about what the person you're judging is, who they are. Amanda brought up I completely forgot this, but we picked up on a whim.
I'm going to pause you for one quick second. Somebody asked where the before it scrolls off. Somebody asked where the did it already scroll? Oh no, there it is. Where the Champions event we talked about was, and it's in Madison. Is it Pegasus? So Pegasus Games in Madison.
More likely starting at 10. Mm-hmm. I want to say.
Yep.
We were waiting around and we had some time to kill at the game store. So Amanda made me buy a game because she tried to buy it, but she left her wallet at home, so I had to buy it. It was the Mr. Meeseeks box. Yep. Right? Yeah. So we bought that game, and that we played a few rounds of it, and it's really like if Cryptozoic was aiming to get a transitional game for Cards Against Humanity, like that's it. They throw dice into the game where you have... It's basically dice chucking until you complete this task, which is basically just Yahtzee.
Sure.
Once you complete this task, you can gain victory points. Yeah, the Meeseeks, if you complete it, they die.
Yay!
But if you don't, they keep accumulating, and if you get to a point where you have too many, they attack each other. You chuck dice, and you take wounds. Like, they introduce a wound mechanic, a completion, like, quest mechanic, and then there's also the Cards Against Humanity mechanic that comes in there, where if you don't, you can still get a chance to get a victory point by drawing off of a dare pile, so you can follow this dare, and some of them are pretty tame, some of them pertain to the show, and some of them are just like, I think I had Aaron in my apartment humping a wall once. Like, it was weird. Shit got weird.
Sure. Is that what he was physically doing?
He was physically humping my wall.
It was unrelated to the game. He was just there doing it.
That's why we don't invite Aaron over.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a nice transition into like real board gaming.
Sure, sure. Okay.
And some real board games maintain aspects of that. Like a couple years ago I talked about Heroes Wanted, because we played it at a little board gaming gathering with one of Brian's friends whose name I'm
Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan. The Ryan that doesn't play War Machine but listens to us every episode because he knows you guys.
Yes.
But Ryan brought it and we played it, and it's a very Euro game. It's like worker placement and card and stuff like that, but they had an optional mechanic in the game where your hero had a goofy thing that you had to do as a player that was like your drawback. Like mine was like every time I took a turn I had to state a fact, and it had to be just some pointless like piece of trivia, and somebody else had to like, you know, make a state like point or do whatever, and it's just random stupid party game stuff, you know, just to keep interest in the people who like that stupider shit because they first played like Cards Against Humanity and stuff like that.
Well, and some of the tasks that like your tasks that you have to complete for the Rick and Morty game are some of them can be simple as help me be more popular at school, help me finish my homework, and then some of them are like help me give a better blowjob. Like there's those weird funky like off-color humor things that are in there to keep that Cards Against Humanity vibe going, and it's just really a really smart game. I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if Cryptozoic knew what they made when they made it, but it really feels like that.
Yeah,
Cryptozoic seems to be very hit and miss with their games.
Very,
they're sometimes like
they've actually been amazing, all but miss in the past. Like it's just recently that they've gotten to the point where they're hit or miss.
No, I like Epic Spell Wars,
and that's more recent. I'm talking like if you go well, Epic Spell Wars was just what, 2 years ago now? The first one, maybe, I don't know. It's close.
The sequel is about 2 years.
Before the sequel's 2 years for sure.
Oh, okay, so never mind. Time is flying. But they used to be like 90% bad, and maybe once in a while a good thing got through. Only recently that they've gotten it, because they were basically, we will buy a license for as cheap as we can, and then shit out a garbage game and make a fortune because people will buy it.
They got me with that goddamn Attack on Titan shit. Like I bought the card game. I read the rules. It seems like it's not going to be super great, but I'm willing to give it a try. But then, like, now I find out that they're just on the cusp of releasing the board game Attack on Titan game, and it seems like it's way better, and I might have just, like, wasted my money.
The board game should have, like, action figures this size, and the players should be the Titans, and you should actually have to, like, fight each other and eat the board game.
I know that right now what it is it's they tried to say that this was, like, so innovative, right? It's a vertical board game. So, like, it's the Titan that's up, and then your scouts or whatever have to go on to the Titan to do things. And I was like, but Connect 4.
Connect 4. And then, like, there's Rampage, which they had to rename to, not Crisis in Meeple City, something Meeple City, because Rampage, the NES game, people sued them. And fuck, even Queen's Gambit, the Star Wars Episode 1 game, the tower, the palace was 3 stories tall, and you had to assemble it, and your models actually climbed up the palace.
No, you're talking Star Trek.
Yes, Star Trek, the Queen's Gambit, where the Borg are invading, where they keep the Stargate.
No, wait, what? I think I just confused myself.
Yeah, no, even Star Wars so. Episode 1, yeah. There was a board game.
Episode 1, okay, sorry. Yeah. I was thought, when you said Star Wars Episode 1, for some odd reason, my mind went immediately to
New
to
Track?
New Hope.
Oh, no, New Hope. That was episode 4? Excuse you?
But I was thinking you were trying to talk about the actual board game.
Not the Chewie, chess that they played, no.
That
no.
Chewie and R2 were playing.
No.
But I thought that's what you were talking about. And then I know in Star Trek there was a 3-tiered game.
Queen's Gambit was a board game that came out that was tied into Star Wars Episode 1. It's actually super good and super rare. The cool thing about it was that there was actually, it was like 3 board games. And over here you had Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan fighting against Darth Maul. And then here you had the Palace Assault, where you were trying to get to the throne room. And like I said, that's 3D1. And over here you had Anakin in space battling the droids. Oh, it was four, because it also had the Gungan battle against the droid army. And this is all happening simultaneously, and as you do actions, you have to choose what you want to do, and they all affect each other. You know, so like if Anakin can shoot down the droid thing, then the droids get shittier on the Gungan battle and in the palace, and once one of the Jedi sides is wiped out here, the other Jedi, like, or Darth Maul, if he wins, gets to come and start fucking shit up in the palace, and they're just broken. So once they get out, they'll just win there. It's actually really, really good.
Yeah, it sounds like it's very mechanical.
Yeah, it was actually, like, shockingly good game for, like, somebody got that. It's the anti-Cryptozoic. Like, they got the license, and they're like, we need to make a damn good game.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to let Star Wars down. Oops. Anyway, but you were original. This all started with you. You started to say something about Cryptozoic. You said, it seems to me that Cryptozoic, and then I trampled you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think it was more the hit and miss thing.
It was more, yeah, so you said they're hit and miss.
They're really hit and miss, as in, like, and that's what we went into the discussion about. Okay, basically, they buy a license, and then they put out a shitty dice game for
them. Yeah, they're the cool mini or not of ripping IP instead of other people's ideas.
I enjoyed Total Recall until I discovered the incredibly deep flaw in that game.
I have yet to play it.
So it's fun. At first, because it's, you know, it's based on the episode. I don't know if you've played the Total Recall
game. Oh, no, I haven't played the game. I watched the episode.
So it's based on the episode, and some of you are parasites, and some of you are humans, and there's characters that come up, and you have to discover whether the characters are parasites or humans, and then you kill them, and if you can declare that you think that there's no parasites left, including players and the board, or maybe just the board. No, just the board. You can say, I don't think there's any parasites left, and if you're right, the humans win, and if you're wrong, the parasites win.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you can also kill people, and so the mechanic to stop you from just shooting everybody is if you kill like four humans, the humans lose automatically. But if you're a parasite and you get killed, you don't even draw a new like loyalty card. You just are now a human. So really, there's no reason to, oh, I'm a parasite, guys. All right, we kill you, and now we have a cooperative game.
Yeah,
like no one should ever lose that game, because that game should always end. Everyone's a human, and the humans win. Because once everybody's on the same side, it's super easy.
That was
and even if you don't just do it overtly and break the game, like you're gonna get figured out, and then you don't lose, you just get killed and join the winning team.
That was when I really try to find ways to like Weird's products, because their minis are really good, and the things they did with Malifaux were really innovative. So then I saw that they had this this board game, and I'm trying. Oh, it's not the other side. That's their Kickstarter one, but It had something. It was very like a Nordic looking, and it had like the endless worm thing involved in it too. But there was board game reviewers had pointed out that the game was almost formulaic to a point where like as soon as you figure out that these are the things you need to do to win, the darkness comes rattling is what it's called. The end fight for the boss was just. It is so simple that it didn't make the game fun anymore. Like, you play it...
Sure.
If you play it in a vacuum and don't know anything about that kind of stuff, then sure, it might be fine. But as soon as you figure it out, it just feels worthless.
And the problem with that is that you can't unworthless it, right? Like, because if you know the correct things to do, you can't... I mean, the only way to make the game fun again is to purposefully not do the right thing. And then, I mean, then you're just... What's the point?
Well, it's like it's kind of like my issue with Time Stories. It's a one play only game.
Sure, but at least Time Stories is marketed as that.
Yeah, sell it too.
It's marketed as that. Like obviously, like knowing
the
after enough time that I've forgotten it, I could maybe replay a Time Stories. But like immediately after finishing a game of Time Stories, like once you know the right things to do, you know, and that's like your third playthrough of a mission. Like you get a mission the first playthrough, you get just stomped, and then the second playthrough, you know, kind of what went wrong, and then the third playthrough, you're like, all right, you don't even deal the cards out. Like, you can just math out, well, we know the first place it takes two actions and we get these cards, and then the second place, well, like, at that point, you have it fucking memorized.
Yeah.
And like you said, there's no
replay of that.
But at least that's how it's supposed to be with Time Stories. With something like this, it's just like, oh, I guess the game, like...
Yeah, it's a disposable turns game. Into a loop, yeah.
It just didn't admit it at first.
Mm-hmm. To their credit, though, and I guess I'll say one bad thing, and then I'll say one more good thing about Weird, but... Their miniatures are fantastic, but for some reason that game has cardboard cutouts of renders. Like, That's all it is. And not 3D renders, but the artistic artwork. So, like, I just don't understand why they didn't do that, because the minis should have sold the game too.
Right.
But I will say that their Kickstarter for The Other Side, which is more of like a skirmish war style game, like it kind of fits in between, about the same size as War Machine, but kind of feels a little bit more like Unit-y, I guess. That game looks really interesting because they've started to pull in less of the things, or they've taken out a lot of the things I don't like about Malifaux, where it's like just this weird dance around the table. It seems like it's more visceral, and the card mechanic is actually really cool. But I will give them credit with that, saying that as much of the game as I've seen, I think that that one is heading in the right direction.
Hmm. That's good.
So I'll hail the other side, I guess.
Hello from the other side.
I'm sure that'll come up too.
Break on through.
Break on through to the other side.
That's not how that song goes. Just, okay.
Brother from another mother. Brian's not here. We can talk about War Machine.
War Machine, so.
Should we talk about the errata a couple weeks late? Should we just talk general War Machine bullshit?
I was thinking, like, I could... the one thing that I wanted to get off my chest about this errata, like, everybody's just, like, chewed it up and regurgitated the errata a bunch of times, and I just want to... I don't want to go over any of the specific changes. I just kind of want to say that I own four Mad Dogs. I don't plan on getting any more. I didn't plan on getting any more when they were good. And I still, after the errata, like, the way they've been hit, it feels like somebody just, like, brought down every hammer in the store on that Mad Dog, because I really think that the...
They were gaspy-tued.
Yeah, really hard. When you look at, like, when you see that things like Haley 1 dropped a point from her battle group, or from her Warjack points, you can tell why they thought that was a necessary change, because the 1 point difference from a Marauder to a Mad Dog is ridiculously powerful.
Yes.
So I can understand how Haley got that, and how they think Gatsby getting 2 Warjack points was okay, but the Mad Dog, I think they, like, they just hit him in so many different ways. They took away power tax on your own models.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Karchev lost his hit buff on his feet.
Yep.
And the Mad Dog exchanged feet for jury rig for fleet, and that just seems like it puts them into the point of unplayable, and the rest of that chassis suffered for it too. Like, the Berserker was not being taken, and
that
only
whole chassis is just dead now.
Well, even the Rager, like, ooh, we get a battle group shield guard, that's super cool, but 11 points is he's not worth that. I think they needed to revisit that whole chassis instead of thinking they got it right the first time and tweak it.
My favorite subtle little point-based thing is that the Behemoth going up in points is a subtle buff for Sorsha. She's actually happier.
It's for any warcaster in Kador for the most part.
As
really enjoys it.
Because what does he cost?
He's 24, but now 25.
Right. So anybody who had 29 or more Warjack points was the people who was really a buff, because now they don't have to spend 5 of their real points on a Jack.
Exactly. And that's like when people sit there and they say that, oh, well, that's just some cutie shyster thing, like just trying to dig at him a little bit. It's like, no. Yep. At 100,
Sorsha doesn't want any other Jacks.
I took a Marauder with her because I was like, well, I don't want a Rager or Mad Dog or anything, so a Marauder seems fine. Now I don't know if I even want him, even though he's fantastic and probably going to be the next Karchev target.
Yeah.
With the Marauders?
But 10 points, it's Mat 7, so you don't have to worry about the feet. Like,
Mat 7?
Yeah, they did not fix that problem. They didn't fix the spam problem. They just shifted it. So now, if they want to sell all those Juggernaut multi-kits that were rotting on shelves, they certainly did it. I'm sure within the next 6 months, you're going to see a 10 Marauder Juggernaut, or 10 Marauder Karchev list. It's just going to happen.
Good times.
Yep.
Marauders are awesome. I've always loved them, but they've always they had the points cost issues.
They also don't. I'm sorry. The power attack on your own models, like, they didn't fix that problem because the Marauders can do it too. They just have their stupid combo, their combo attack smite, so you can still slam a Jack over a caster and still get that.
It has
still
to be enemy Jack.
No, it doesn't.
No, the combo smite is a power attack.
Oh,
it's a power attack.
No, it's
slam.
Not.
No, it's not a power attack. It just can be slammed.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It's not. So chain attack, grab and smash, you wouldn't be able to do on a friendly, because chain attack, grab and smash says make a power attack targeting the model. But the smite and crit smite and combo smite and chain attack smite all just say slam the model.
Yeah, they don't say make a power attack. You just follow the rules that a slam would be.
Right.
other than targeting it with
slamming one. Something is not inherently doing a power attack slam.
That's why my freebooter apocalypse with Commodore cannons is really cool.
Yep.
Because they can just slam freebooters over things and still knock them down.
Yep.
So, it's a...
Well, the Commodore shooting your own shit has been a tried and true tradition even before laser throws. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a thing.
And it's worded in the same way as the combo attacks are. You don't perform the power attack, it just gets slammed.
Yeah. I don't know. Overall, I thought they hit most of the right stuff and tweaked some of the right stuff. Poor Linissa Rissell, but oh well.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if the one. Well, the 1 point doesn't.
It doesn't all of my lists are 1 point over right now.
Yeah, I know that's
as a minion player.
You do have to readjust. Yeah. Now I see the one of our streamers or chat room people.
Viewers.
Viewers is saying that a Kador Jack running 12 inches has value, but that Kador Jack running 12 inches and then blowing up
the line above him says it would have been fine if he still had jury rank.
Okay, so I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't. Yeah, I think I just looked over quick. And
that's the issue with fleet, is that to fleet and then run, you risk an explosion.
Exactly, it's terrible. I mean, if you want them to blow up, which is perfectly fine, that's the change that I thought they would have made to the Mad Dog was to change the explosion rate, because it's not a 4-inch AoE, it's like it's 3 or 4 inches from him. It's just this massive
it's big.
Footprint. Of POW 14 blasts on things is just insane. But that was my only thing. I know that we all expected a lot more from the errata as far as lifting things up, but I feel like they put band-aids over a lot of the things that we were having problems with. Yeah. So overall, I think the errata was good.
You there are argue a lot of that things they that put band-aids on stuff that was disemboweled, so like the band-aids weren't enough possibly, mm-hmm. but I don't know that they necessarily. Like, the things they help, like, everything in the errata, I could at least go, oh, okay, for the most part. You know, and some of it was wrong. Like, the Mad Dogs, like you said, like, they probably did too much to the Mad Dogs. Yeah. Not even probably. They did too much to the Mad Dogs, but at least I agreed with the concept of do something about Mad Dogs.
Yep.
So, what they did was wrong at some times, but at least they were doing it to the right thing.
Yeah, I know. Another thing I just have a problem with is temporal barrier. I feel like that one should have been redesigned if they thought it was a problem, because right now it just doesn't feel good.
I mean, 4 might be too expensive for what it is now. I think the spell is perfectly fine. I mean, it's still -2 defense to everything within 16 inches of her. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty fucking good.
She does have Deadeye, though, too, so it's like you're kind of double dipping, and right. I don't know. That's why I feel like Grim 1 is really bad, because he's just like hit buff on top of hit buff on top of hit buff, and that's just what he does, and
right,
it doesn't make him feel good.
Right? So if she wants one unit to be really accurate, she Deadeyes it. If she wants her whole army to be a little bit better, she casts Temporal Barrier.
It is an option, which is like a hot topic for War Machine right now.
And despite what stupid people say, options are not Scornergy.
No. It feels a little weird sometimes, but the options were fine. All in all, the errata was fine. I mean, I don't know if I'm... I don't think there was anything that I can recall in there that was like... they did something... Maybe the Wold Weird feels a little too... good right now, just a little too good.
Wold Weird is really good right now. Yeah.
I always felt the Wold Weird was amazing.
It was always like a hidden treasure.
Yeah.
Now it's just an out there treasure.
Yeah. Now it's really cheap. It's really easy to spam.
Yep.
And yeah.
Pew pew pew.
Yep.
I really like the change they did to the Hellmouth. I thought it was really good. I was really worried that would be. Something they overcorrected based on the belly aching from the community in general, but I'm glad that Privateer Press, if there's one thing that I walk away from that was just like fantastic, was the fact that a lot of people were bitching about that model so much, and the change they made to it took the like egregious feel off of it and brought it more in line with like a really good model for its points.
Funny trick, this would be more with the Shifting Stone, or the Sentry Stone, but I guess the Hellmouth should be able to do it too, is if you bring a Gobber Chef, you can make a mannequin and then eat it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the timing. It's just delivery. Like your beast about to frenzy. You're like, no, I ordered you a meal. Oh, thank you.
And I think that's fine. I mean, like, the Gobber's already,
it's a
like...
a cute little trick.
Yeah, he's a one-point model that it then... And that brings a little bit more relevancy to him being in the game other than just a filler.
Yep.
Or a body. Or a solo to contest something.
He's great when he's triggering Gangfighter.
He's also great when he's owning a flag for... on the far side of the table your opponent isn't paying attention to.
Yeah, I'm happy that the errata wasn't a complete answer to the internet, in a sense.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at with the hell mouth.
I'm glad that it you know, they answered some questions that the internet had and complained about, but it wasn't like a full blown, you know, just answering to the loudest voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunately, I mean, the amount of people that do play in tournaments, the amount of people that talk about War Machine online has nothing compared to the actual people that go into stores and play.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people who listen to stuff like that, but the amount of people that are playing at your local game store is by far outweighing all the tournament players out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've got anywhere from 10 to 16 people come to Baraboo on Friday nights, and we're all happy with the game the way it is. Like, mm-hmm. the changes that happen just, like, shift some things that we're doing, but I don't think anybody's, like, just completely trashing the game. Like, we still play it. We still enjoy it. I'm having a good time. At first, I had a really difficult time accepting the whole no cards thing because I am a card player, and I had a really difficult time trying to understand how Privateer Press got their data that told them that people are using War Room and games more than cards, because most of us are like middle lower class folks or higher, mm-hmm. and we probably all have smartphones, and a lot of us use War Room to build our armies but not necessarily play them.
Sure.
So if they're using how many users, or if they're taking the number of users of War Room and using that to determine how many people are using War Room over cards, that's not how statistics and numbers work. So I wasn't really happy with the decision that they made to do that at first, but the more I think about it, it's probably like smarter for the game if they want to have this more very loose Blizzard-esque approach to rebalancing and retooling things.
It frees them up to not have to, because now the inconvenience of having to print replacement cards for things doesn't even have to enter into the decision making of whether they change a model or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if there was a 1 in a million chance that they're like, well, maybe we should tweak this thing's mat by one, but let's just not. Like, that's just out the window now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even enter into the decision. And you can still do cards, right? You just have to download the PDFs.
Exactly. Like, you can get them printed off yourself. And go to some
place like, Art Scout or whatever. Like, there's these places online where you can just give them PDFs and they print custom playing cards for you. So yep. you can just get your own physical cards or just print them on a sheet of paper and cut them out.
And the shipping isn't ridiculous. Like, no. Privateer Press is, like, more widely known right. for.
And the other great thing about the cards is that because the PDFs are going to be freely available on the internet, they officially said none of the code talk anymore with stats.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to go like, well, their mat is a half of a standard English unit of measurement minus one times the number of presidents we've had whose first names. You just say six.
Yeah.
Like, you can just do that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm happy about that as well. I mean, I'm pretty much an exclusive card player. I don't like using War Room. If I had a tablet of some sort, I would probably like it, but man,
Said something. I literally gave a tablet to Jim.
Oh, goddamn it.
I had an iPad I wasn't using.
Jim doesn't play.
He does now. He's been down the last few weeks using my iPad.
God damn it.
Yeah, no, and Andy uses the iPad to play Final Fantasy Tactics.
I could be playing Warhammer Quest on that fucking thing.
Yeah. I have Talisman on my Kindle.
Well, that's a horrible game anyway.
Yeah, well,
talk about a game that never fucking ends. I love Talisman. Talisman is a great game. Talisman only goes fine until that one person's in that inner fucking circle.
And then you're like, you win.
Fucking over everyone else. Like, I got the crown. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. All right, this game's done. And one first person that dies or loses all their treasure to the fucking hoarders.
Yeah.
Yeah, done. No. But I like the fact I can print out cards. The big issue I had with that is, which it seems odd, as a TO, unless they're using War Room, how the fuck am I supposed to know what version is the most current version of the cards?
Yeah, you'll have to, and they also had said that there was you have to use the cards in that are represented in War Room, mm-hmm. as they verbatim. So like, yep. if somebody's tweaking the words a little bit, like you as a TO, I don't know if it's okay to expect every tournament organizer to know each card word for word. To see and inspect those cards if they're going to do that, because you also have to inspect the list and the cards, and it's really demanding for somebody who's trying to run like the white glove clean ship.
Or just running a large tournament.
To be fair, though, so much. Like, you've made plenty of custom cards for things like your Warboy UA and stuff like that, and like shit like the alternate timeline casters existed and things like that. So people have always had the ability to have wrong physical cards. This has always been out there. Now it's more of a universally known fact of life.
It can happen accidentally. I wasn't saying that somebody would bring in, let's say, you're playing with Kane, and Kane has come out with two revisions since then. But a person may not be paying attention that much. He just went out and he just bought Kane.
Right.
And Kane came with a card because it's an older card. It's before they decided not to pack him with cards.
Right.
And so he's just got the Mark III version of the card. He doesn't know that there's two revisions since then.
No, you're right. It's more likely to happen now accidentally. It's just as a TO, it was always possible that it could be happening. It's just in the past, it would have been purposeful, but you're never going to catch it. Like, you don't spot check cards to make sure somebody's strength is right. I mean, this just isn't a thing we do.
The one nice thing that they have done, at least in the errata, in the most recent errata, they have a listing of all the cards that have changed.
Yeah.
With the version number that's on them, which is great. Yeah, which I know Travis pointed out. I didn't even see it, but I was leading to that point.
I was showcasing it as like the Vanna White. So that was me just trying to be cool there.
Also, side note: if you erratas makes me want to kill people.
Yeah,
the recent erratas
when people say erratas, like two of the best erratas, and that was the one errata that I didn't like. It erratum is pluralized as errata.
Oh, it is actually a rata. So it is a rata is actually
it's like plural, datum like it's and
it's
data.
Like rhinoceros.
No, it's like datum and data. Okay. There's one piece of datum, and once you have more than one of them, then you have several data.
Datas.
Sure. No, there's only one data.
There was two datas.
No,
there was two datas.
There's data. There's B4 and there's lore. Yeah. And lore might be B4, but that's a fan theory. It's never been proven in the canon. Okay. But there's not two datas. There's just multiple. I can't remember the scientist's name. I was going to keep going and say multiple androids built by him, but I can't remember the name of the scientist, so I have to stop. But,
yeah. Star Trek geekdom just went.
Yeah. What is the fucking scientist's name?
I'm going to have to look it up.
I am.
Are you excited about the new series?
No. There's a new series?
There's a new series on CBS.
No, I don't care.
I mean, it's probably going to be horrible, but
probably.
It's a new series on
CBS. Like, Star Trek died to be when they had a theme song with lyrics. That was shit. Enterprise was hot fucking garbage.
Enterprise wasn't that bad.
Oh, I watched.
It wasn't as bad as fucking Voyager.
It got better like on season 3 or something when they introduced a whole ongoing thing with like the space Nazis and everything. That was cool. But
they ended the series like very soon after that, didn't they?
Yeah, like because they switched showrunners because it was so fucking bad that they like, all right, people, fix this. And they made this like season and a half long. They turned it around, but it was too late. And so it ended up dying. But like the third goddamn episode is what killed it for me. And then I stopped watching it until somebody told me I had to watch it because it got good again like 3 seasons later. Was when they go to a planet and the planet, everybody's dying of a plague.
Mm-hmm. A plague.
There's P-L-G? A plaque.
P-L-E-G.
There's a plaque. Yeah. P-L-E-G. That's not a word.
It sounds like
it's because they're pegging too much.
Yeah, they're pegging. And so everybody's dying because they're pegging too much. No such thing as pegging too much. Anyway, so everybody's dying of a plague.
Thank you.
Everyone's dying from pledge. And so the problem is lemony flesh.
Pledging their plague.
Yeah, they're pledging their plague, and they have a plaque that has their pledge, and that's what they're dying from. So the point is that it's like something that we have. It's like smallpox. You know, they're all dying of smallpox, and they're not stupid soccer moms, so they vaccinate if they could.
Sure.
But they just don't have access to it because this planet hasn't invented the vaccine for smallpox.
Okay.
And so the humans or, you know, whatever, are like, we're sitting here, and we got it, and we could give them infinite smallpox vaccines, but they have to decide whether to
interfere or not.
Well, but there is no prime directive, right? Because this is a prequel. And so that's the thing. So you get this interesting... It was an interesting episode. And he's weighing whether he should help these people or not, whether it's the right thing to do, blah, blah, blah. And it's very interesting. And then at the end, after he makes the decision, he basically just, like, poses and looks directly at the cameras, like, maybe in the future I'll have some sort of a
directive that will let me know what I should do in situations like this. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Was this
like,
Scott Bakula?
Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, are you shitting me? I understand that this is pre-priced. Like, I get it. Okay, yeah. You did not have to fucking actually just break the fourth wall to tell me that the whole point of this episode was that you didn't have the prime directive yet. Use the phrase directive. Oh, I was so fucking furious. And then I didn't watch it again for like 3 years. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's got to be. Whatever they showed on that show has got to be better than Voyager. It annoys me so much.
Voyager had The Rock.
It had for one fucking episode.
That's enough. That's more than Enterprise had.
No. It bothered me so much. It's like, all right, you fucker, you fucked us over. You broke whatever kind of thing. If we weren't like 50,000 million light years away from home, you'd be in jail. But you need to run comms, so don't do it again.
Yeah.
Next episode.
Does it again.
Fuck.
My biggest issue with Voyager was that it was on at around the same time as Farscape, so I could just compare the two of them to each other.
Everything I heard about Farscape is good.
Yeah, so. Farscape is good. Sometimes Farscape gets crazy, but that's part of the charm of it.
I tried so hard. Tried.
Oops, sorry. Oh, man. Did you watch, like...
I think it's probably the first four.
It suffers from first seasonitis. Yeah. It really does. And so you have to get through the first... Like, it's not bad for the whole first season, but it definitely... You got to stick with it.
I don't know. The last time I stuck with something, it was the OA.
I will buy you a steak dinner if you watch at least the first two seasons of Farscape and don't fall in love.
Okay, I'll hold you up.
He'll wait till after the steak dinner when you.
I actually really liked it.
I thought it was really good.
episode 4 and 5 of season 2. Episode 4 is Crackers Don't Matter, and episode 5 is The Way We Weren't. And Crackers Don't Matter is fucking hilarious, and The Way We Weren't is ball your eyes out, go look for razor blades, feels train. Mm-hmm. And back to back, it just shows the heights that Farscape can get, and it's two of my favorite episodes of television. So like at least that. But anyway, the point is. What Farscape does right and why it's topical is the other thing that was stupid about Voyager. There's no Jiffy Lubes out there, okay? But the Borg would just sodomize them. Half the ship would blow up. Yeah. And then the next episode, it's got a squeaky new paint job on it. Like, there was never long-lasting repercussions. Meanwhile, Farscape, the ship gets set on fire. It is crippled for 2.5 fucking seasons because it was set on fire and they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so, like, they got that. They understood that. You know, that, and that's so frustrating. Then I look at Voyager and they're like, yeah, no, the ship's fine. No explanation. But if you go too fast, you turn into a newt.
Yes. Well, that was the other problem I had with it, too, is they really wanted to have, like, the Robinson Crusoe version of Star Trek. It was basically their ship out of water, they're away from home, you know, there's nothing, but there was no consequence for any fucking action they had on that show.
It was lost in space, right? It was like, here's a random episode, here's a goofy thing we introduce, it'll never get brought up again, and there's no consequences. Everything was bottle.
The one episode that I really liked from Voyager... to give it a positive point, I really like the one where they found the Borg, not 7 of 9, where they found the one Borg which they basically tried to make human again,
sure,
to teach them that. But that was all done in one episode and never spoken of again.
Yep.
God damn that fucking show.
I don't know, maybe it's just something with sci-fi shows too, but I feel like I'm at this, in addition to Farscape, I'm at this critical point in Battlestar Galactica, where like they settled on New Capria.
Oh yeah, stop watching.
And that's where I feel every episode I see, I'm just like, it's got to get better.
I love one season of Battlestar Galactica.
Two wasn't terrible.
Two isn't terrible, but it's like Lost, where like the first season's a masterpiece, mm-hmm. and then it just keeps getting worse, and you were like, why didn't I stop when I had a chance?
Yeah, well, it's funny. A funny story that started it up was that Amanda and I were just bored. We were eating dinner while watching Netflix, because after dinner we were going to go play some games, whether it was Overwatch or Destiny. So we decided to put on like a short show, like a BoJack Horseman or something. So we ended up going with Portlandia. Like, I picked that up after like hate watching it for 2 seasons.
Sure.
And so there was one on there where the people, they like lose their house and their job because they cannot stop binge watching Battlestar Galactica. So we were like, should we try that? Sure. And so we did it, and we did the binge watching. We still kept our jobs in our apartment and everything, but after we got to the second or the third season, and I think Amanda's at the point where she doesn't want to watch it anymore, and now I have to, like, I'm on a quest. Like, do I keep going and soldiering forward, or do I just enjoy the moments I had without the fat, God damn it, the other Adama, the young one. I can't remember his first name. But he now, then he showed up in a fat suit, and now I think the shark has been jumped.
Apollo.
Yeah, Apollo. Yeah. There you go.
Just finish it. I think if you're on third season, you don't have that far to go.
I think it went five.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
You haven't quite reached the point where they start randomly picking character names out of a hat to turn into Cylons for no plot reason.
Yeah, because weren't there only like eight originally?
Yeah. It's just they just start picking random ones to be...
Interesting.
I'm so glad I never picked up on that show.
Oh, God. It's just so frustrating. Oh, it should have been so good.
If you want a good sci-fi show, the second season's starting up soon, and I hope it doesn't jump a shark, but The Expanse.
I think I've heard a little bit about it, but not really. Like, there was this point where I was just like, I felt like I needed to become a more, like, diverse nerd, and the sci-fi world was just not... I was like, Star Wars is cool, even though it's space fantasy, but as far as sci-fi goes, I didn't care for it at all. Like, it just couldn't stick to my ribs.
The Expanse is kind of like a mix between kind of like the world environment of the Running Man. I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about the actual world that that Stephen King wrote about.
In the book, yep.
Yeah, which was basically just a overpolluted world. People are dying of cancer, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
What The Expanse really is, it's Earth and Mars. Humans have terraformed basically all of the solar system. And they're all fighting over... not fighting, but they mine the asteroid belt that's between Mars and Jupiter. And that's... They're all called belters. And... It's kind of the political story that happens between Mars and Earth.
Yeah.
But it's overall, the show is really good.
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Yeah.
I've said
Jim likes it, oddly.
The big sci-fi show that, speaking of things starting up, but this won't be the second season. This will be, well, 11th numerically, technically the 12th because of season zero. But MST3K sometime in the next couple months.
I don't consider that being a sci-fi show. I don't consider that being a sci-fi show.
It's in space. There's robots. There's mad scientists. What's not sci-fi about it?
It's not sci-fi.
I'll have you know.
It is a comedy.
Sci-fi can be comedy.
It's not.
Look at Ice Pirates.
Well, that, I don't know if that was actually intentional.
Of course that was intentional. You think that assembly line of chompers was not supposed to be hilarious?
Or space herpes.
Space herpes?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Morons from Outer Space?
Probably.
That's another classic.
Oh, but no. For a minute, Earth Girls Are Easy popped into my head.
Oh, yeah, Earth Girls Are Easy. Unironically amazing. Got that great day. Because I'm a Blonde, one of Julie Brown's best films. Yep. Or best songs.
So all in all, a rat, fine.
Yep.
The next rat, I'd like to see more stuff brought up that needs to be brought up, so there's not so much of this, like, cream always rising to the top in the competitive world and War Machine. I'd like to see more diversity.
I would like all Warjacks to get power up, not just Warjacks with cortexes, because I really feel Convergence deserves power up and induction.
Sure. Live in that world.
Induction's bullshit. I paid a charge, and now this guy's not within six of my other guys, so I don't get the focus transferred over.
It's almost like you still need to position your stuff right.
The best thing ever, and by best thing,
you should really clarify thing. Though that you were being sarcastic.
So when Mark 3 first dropped, there were people on the forums, unironically, not sarcastically, not humorously, arguing that Induction in Mark 3 is worse than Induction in Mark 2.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Same.
No. Here's the thing. In Mark 2, you could only induct the first focus you spent.
Mm-hmm.
In Mark 3, you can induct any number of focus that you spend.
Yeah.
So it's worse. And his logic was, if you do what I just said. In Mark 2, if you spent the focus charge and you went up, what you did with that other focus was irrelevant. You'd already inducted your one.
Getting wasted.
Now, you're not living up to your full potential. Now, those are wasted, whereas before they were automatically wasted. Now, you know in your heart that if you'd been better, you could have saved them, so you feel the guilt of fail. Like,
yeah, that's like
I just wanted to choke a bitch. Like, the fuck are you talking about? It's like, yeah, you're more likely to lose on focus than you could have had. No, like, What?
That sounds like something like a war machine philosophy professor would say.
It's so fucking dumb.
It is. Just because the focus isn't going anywhere effective doesn't mean you're wasting it. Or, I mean, well, technically you're wasting it, but it doesn't make it worse that you're wasting it. It's just that before you couldn't have done it. I'd rather throw my money into a pit than not have any money to throw into that pit at all.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
I don't know.
Convergence has always been a faction where you have to build up your Rube Goldberg machine.
It's
and
a
now
very...
you just have to plan it a little bit better where, you know, you can...
You don't even have to! You don't even have to! It's just, if you do, you get bonuses!
Yeah, if you want
if you continue to play exactly as you played in Mark II, it is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Therefore, it can't possibly be worse now, because at its very worst, it's just as good.
Yeah.
Just like, are you shitting me, buddy?
Yeah. No. I'm Cyrus has a lot of legitimate complaints, but that is not one of them, I don't think.
No. Power up is if they should get it, then my monstrosity should get power up as well.
Lack of defensive support is their main legitimate weakness, I think. You know, they don't have, you know, armor buffs and stuff like that outside of one spell on a caster, but they don't have like Junior or things like that you can just drop in.
Yeah, or really utility solos like you.
Their one utility solo just got nerfed to pointlessness with the general change to recursion.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Enigma Foundry went from one of the best solos to being garbage.
Well, and that I almost feel like that recursion feels a little bit more offensive than support anyway, so I guess I'll just frame it differently. Mm. But I never thought of the Necrotech as a defensive piece. Unless you were taking it with Scar.
I mean, the Optifex Directive is nice. It's 4 points for 3 guys, each of which does, like, they're you know, it's our version of the choir or whatever, and they're good. Mm-hmm. I mean, magical weapons is solid to have, Pathfinder's good to have, and repair's the third option.
They're also, I think they're the cheapest point per repair roll that you can get in the game.
Yeah, it's 4 points for 3 of them, and they're not bad. They're D3 plus 1. I mean, that's not huge, but it's 2 to 4.
I think the Kador battle mechanics are four guys for 3 points at a min
unit.
And
that's super cheap.
Yeah.
No. But all they do is repair. They can't give magical weapons and Pathfinder.
They can
get in the way. And look really cool when they attack, especially the leader. Like when the leader goes out and charges with that huge wrench behind his back. It's so good.
Hey, I can put a UA onto my mechanics that lets them re-roll their attack rolls once per game.
Kato mechanics get they have a UA too.
They have a Man of War UA.
Yeah, but that doesn't let them re-roll their attack rolls.
No, but
well,
it's still a Man of War.
Yeah, but I'm just saying I can reroll their attack rolls.
Okay.
You can't. Losers.
You could just put Fortune on them.
Losers.
Who's got Fortune in Kador? Kador's got somebody with Fortune, don't they?
No, they used to. It was
importance instead.
It was Harkovich, but he lost it. He lost all unit support. At least, if I'm recalling right, he lost all unit support and became a battle group only caster for the most part. But I know that I don't know how many other people out there are preparing or prepping for ATC stuff already. I still have to sign up our team once we figure out a name to sign up with.
Yep, there's still people. We had somebody sign up yesterday. They're still trickling in.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll get worse or more will come as it gets closer. But practicing.
Travis is panicking.
Well, if that's what it's doing for him, then I might just wait till the last day. But okay,
no.
Right now, Travis is panicking. A week from now, I'll be panicking.
Okay.
And I like it less when I'm panicking.
All right. Well, at least I can keep you happy. Because I'll never be able to keep Travis happy, no matter how hard I try.
But yeah, there's currently like 7 teams that I'm texting actively that are like, when's done, you know, when stuff turned out, like you, and then Chuck was like asking, and the Muse crew still hasn't signed up, and then it's just all these people keep texting me like, hey, how long do we have to sign up? It's just like, just fucking sign up already.
Yeah. We're already like of our team, I'm probably the most indecisive one already, just because like I'm in between 2 factions, because I think I can only go playing a single faction for maybe 3 months tops before I want to jump ship to a different one. So right now it's like I'm thinking about jumping from the Kador ship onto Mercs, because like the gun bunnies are fantastic and Kingmaker is my kind of bandwagon. So
I wonder how many of the teams dragging their feet have Scorn players.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be crazy.
Yeah,
because they'll have like, will they have time when the? And well, we don't know when the errata is gonna drop, but they should have time to submit a post errata list.
Yeah, because the Scorn errata should happen this month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully within the next week or so, Because they said, you know, middle to beginning. So yeah. I would hope before the end of next week. Hopefully before the end of this week.
Mm-hmm.
But the scoring one will come. And then sign up doesn't end until the end of January. And then list isn't until the middle of February. So they'll have time. They'll have time.
Yeah. I know. I thought Tuesday or Thursday, the theme lists in general were supposed to drop. So I think that's going to change a lot of ATC activity as well. So that'll be another interesting shakeup.
One of our viewers brought up something cool that it would be really handy for Convergence to have, which is a solo that can work like as an induction extender.
Yeah, like that'd be interesting.
It's like I didn't make that feat for a caster I made up.
Yeah. Hey, I made up that feat. You made up everything else about that caster. You gave her four other casters' feats all shoved together onto one card.
I did.
And I'm like, how about instead this feat? And then we figured out that feat would be terrible because the entire point of your caster was for who's the boss, which means the only faction that caster couldn't have is the one that has induction.
We made it so those casters got... They can actually be in...
Oh, those casters can stay in that faction? Yeah. Okay, then that feat would be...
Because they're all special casters for that. But yeah, I like my...
No, yeah, that was good.
I don't know if I should mention her. But anyway, it was a really cool caster I made for Convergence. Yeah. I also made some really cool casters for minions.
Yeah, the Andy special. Is that like a Who's a Boss thing then?
Those guys, yeah. Specifically, okay. I will only use them for our charity Who's the Boss.
That's really cool.
I will not use them for anything else.
Yeah.
And it's only the charity Who's the Boss. It's in Madison, Wisconsin, where we had the attack of the 50-foot Haley.
Got to keep it exclusive.
Yeah, and that one might have some changes in its spell list.
50-foot Haley, you just need to not have, like, an army. You should just roll 50-foot Haley, and you just put your army back on the tray and just go to town.
Just give her, like, a Battletech hitbox thing?
Yeah.
I was thinking about adding Field of Fire to her, where she can only attack something with her left hand or right hand.
You know, I just think if you give her, like, 50 hit points...
I would like to have the grid. I would like to have the health grid.
Yeah, you can grid like Karchev style. You can health grid it.
Like you could have like her head like a well kind of standard.
You want full on Battletech style?
Yeah, like her head grids. And like if you roll on the location where you hit Haley, if you hit her in her head too many times, maybe she loses a couple of focus.
Yeah,
next turn.
Yeah,
or something. Like she can't Gripple do lens. One of her abilities or something.
Yeah,
yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be. That would take a lot of playtesting, because that's like going to the whole things of like when they're
Alternately,
using that.
It would take zero playtesting, because who gives a shit?
That's true, too. That's true.
Yeah.
Well,
it's there for fun.
Well, I mean, we had like a whole bunch of goofy scenarios that we never used for Who's the Boss that I would still really like to
like the trains. What happens when Haley is hit by a train?
It's more
that sounds dirty.
Yeah, that did sound dirty. No, but we had the Haley there, or not Haley, but we had trains. We had the Shredder Swarm that I still believe was stolen for the Longest Night scenario.
Definitely. Flat out stolen.
Then I have a Monster Apocalypse scenario, which your army doesn't actually come in. It's not deployed as normal. It actually is brought in via resource management.
Mm-hmm.
So they appear in spots on the board, and then the buildings are all destructible.
I missed the one where you're fighting over a cannon, like the flag or that you had to dominate or control was a cannon, and then when you scored it, it would fire, and you would drift like a massive AOE onto one of the other tables next to you.
Nice.
That was all those other two tables were all just trenches.
Yeah.
So that was the incoming for those
and
two
you'd
guys.
Say, hold on a second, guys. And then you go over and you'd roll and you just deviate a big AOE and it just do like POW 20 or whatever it landed on. Devastate, throw everything. Good times.
Yeah, we did. We play tested that. And that seemed like everyone loved that.
Yeah.
The other one was the Live and Death.
Yeah, we never even tested that one. That was my idea because I ripped it off from Risk or not. Yeah, God. God damn it! It was there's a Greek.
Like a heaven, hell.
There was a Greek. No, it was Greek god. It was Greek god because there was the Risk 2020 or 2500 whatever. There's a Risk board game that you like go attack the moon and shit like that. And then they came out when there's like Risk Godstorm or something where that actually had like as your troops died, they played in the underworld, and so you had living troops and dead troops, and so it was like two games of Risk at the same time. And we were gonna have the board would be 2 foot wide and 2 foot wide, and as your troopers died, they would just go into hell and fight some more. And so there would be a control point on each of the two sides. And so once, like, if I was tabling you you would just start dominating the zone over here in the underworld because I wouldn't have anything fighting you there, so I want my shit to die so it could get over there.
That sounds fun.
We never even really tested that one.
No, I still would like to do that one too.
I feel like since I've been waiting around in the Merc pool a little bit for the last few months, like I dabbled with Bart for a while and played the Drudge Invasion crazy operating theater list. And I've been playing with Magnus too, Ashlyn as well. But I think I've gotten to that point where I've kind of assimilated to the Merc attitude, and now I'm just diving into like the optimistic jank pool. And my new target that I've acquired are freebooters. I'm just, for some reason, I'm trying to make 9 or 8 freebooters work for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm just I'm in a mad dash to get a bunch of freebooters.
Word of advice for all the folks out there that really want to try to copy Brian or have not already got out their freebooters. Old school freebooters had a two-piece part for their torso, which was the shoulders and in the midsection, and then they had like a long headpiece that would fit into there. Privateer recently, within like the last year or so, started putting out better versions of the Mariner and the Freebooter, which their whole upper torso is all in resin, and it fits much better. It doesn't have a gap in there.
They did the same thing with Snapjaw.
Oh, Snapjaw's
Snapjaw's all in- torso and head is one piece now. It's not like the two halves where you have to like put his chest or his head away. Yeah. Because I got Wrong Eye and Snapjaw recently, and Wrong Eye too. Wrong Eye's like just his arm and tail are one piece that like snaps onto the backside of this whole one piece torso and left arm. Mm. Yeah, it's super nice.
Danielle had pointed out that the Spitter was like that too, where it's gotten some new repiece love.
Yeah, I've been liking their new resin stuff that they've been putting out into their packages, besides the Extreme.
I was just going to say it.
The Extreme Mauler and the Extreme, Mulg.
Yep, because that conversion is a lot more of a pain in the ass to do now.
Yep. So I got commissioned to build another Extreme Mulg for somebody, and I couldn't do it because both of those pieces, which normally were two pieces, Mulg and the Extreme Mauler.
Each of them are one solid piece now, so you have to saw them in half.
Yeah, I can't just pull off his back stones and put them onto the Extreme Mauler anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Can you still? Because I know like the Metal Nomad is still on their sites. Are any of these metal?
I think they are. I think they're still.
If you get them exclusive, I think they might give you a metal one. But
there's limited ones still. But
yeah,
but a lot of them are not. I think the Metal Nomad is still available.
I know 100% that the Metal Nomad is still available. I'm not sure if that means that you can still get a Metal Extreme Maul or a Metal Mulg and so on.
You can at least get the piece for Mulg through their parts store. That much I know for sure. So you can still get just the one back piece.
And if you're being a Merc player, I would highly recommend just picking up the metal pieces, the metal jacks, because, I mean, the Rover looks fine by himself, but that mule just looks like,
yeah, it's a little derpy.
Nomad look like,
yeah, I put out, when I first started collecting them, I put out the big like the big message to say I want metal nomads, and I ended up getting 5 of them so far, so I'm pretty happy with where I'm at with those. But now it's like the freebooters are getting a little harder to find. I think the people who have them want to keep them, so now I just have to go into my local game store. 90%
like of a freebooter at home
because
I used it to make a nomad.
Well, then that's the no-booter.
Yeah, my no-booter. I love the no-booter. Because the good thing about the freebooter in Mark II is that it was beautiful, but it was garbage. Mm-hmm. And so I just bits-ordered freebooter, or I bits-ordered Nomad Arms, and he looks fucking beautiful.
Well, and for me, it's I'm putting freebooter arms on a Mariner.
But that's just a freebooter.
No, they're different now.
They have been different. Mm-hmm. The legs that are on a Mariner are completely different.
Oh, because they're planted. It's not like in the running stance. Yeah,
and like, no, even the shape and the make of the legs.
Yep. His head is more like diving mask too.
Yep.
I thought their torsos and head were the same.
Torsos, I think, are the same. The head is different,
which explains why it was a different piece in Mark II.
The reason why, because I did some research on this, the model that's in the Undercity, that is a conversion of a Mariner and a Nomad, or a Mariner and a Freebooter. So it's got Mariner legs. Because I was trying to figure out like why the legs look different on it, And then I took another look at it. No, it's fucking actual Mariner legs stuck to a freebooter.
Interesting.
Yep. And that's why you can't use those, technically, other than them saying you can't use them.
Well, yes. Yes.
But if you put fucking primer on that thing...
You couldn't
and
tell.
Shaved yeah, it off its base. No one's going to be able to tell unless they picked up the model themselves.
Spoiler, yeah. If you ever face me and I'm running my 28 razor bore list,
yeah,
like 6 of them are illegal. Because I cannibalized them
from the adventure kit,
yeah.
That's where I got the Targ for my minions army. I just pulled them out of the box.
Excuse you, it has the wrong weapon. The Targ in that has like a sickle
instead
of having a... butcher knife.
See, and I had never paid attention to the original model.
Well, I would pay attention. I'm going to call it out now.
Who uses a sickle in a surgical room?
Well,
I mean, like,
scalpel.
Have you seen a number? I think it's the number 14 scalpel. It is sickle shaped.
Sickle cell anemia?
Sure. We'll go with
that.
Well,
it's not this big, though.
No, but the blade on it has, has a curve to it.
Sure.
The sharp end is on the bottom.
Cut people
curve.
With that, absolutely. But it's smaller. It's for, you know, the more, like, creepy cutting versus just, like, massive injury cutting.
Yeah, you know, I've never really understood what it was for. I just got them on accident. But I still use them.
No, college kids are terrified when you're cutting them up with one of those.
Yeah.
So let me see if this... does it matter? Because if he's got a big butcher cleaver, that was his original surgical weapon, and now it they're basically going to do the same.
It's like kitchen knife size. I don't think he has a big cleaver. I think he just has like a knife. Maybe I'm misremembering.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that my razor bores are actually illegal because I think Weird did a better job of making bores than Privateer Press did. But theirs are newer, so there's that. But I just sculpted a little metal plate on the back of them. Now they look like razor boards, but better.
Half the ones you're missing jawbones.
Not half, just two of my 28. Because my first four, no, I guess it was three. Because my first six, because I had the six Marx brothers. Yeah, Harpo, Groucho, Chico, Zeppo, and Gummo, and Carl. So the ones that have a lower jaw, I thought it was just flash on the sprue, and I threw it away. It's this tiny, like the head of a pin-sized little thing, and half of them don't have one of those, and so I just thought none of them did, and I threw them away.
Yeah, I can't remember. There was a model that I built recently where I ended up chopping off a piece that should have stayed on there. I just can't remember it, but...
Kaya, too.
Maybe.
She has a little hand.
Oh, yeah, her little super tiny hand.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking rune shapers. Speaking of little bits on stupid fucking hands. Well, so they have two hands, right? And one's like this, and one's like this. And this one's a single fucking piece, and this one, the thumb, is a separate bit on the sprue that you have to glue in.
I wonder if it has something to do with the depth of the cast for the wheel, but...
That's perfectly understandable. Here's an idea.
Just bend the
there.
Thumb. Yeah.
Okay? Why not have both hands have it open that... Why does this thumb need to be bent a quarter of a degree inward to the point where the sprue... The mold requires it to be a separate piece?
Yeah.
Just open that fucking hand.
Well, and this kind of brings back and just ties the errata just a little bit in to start that all over again. But the public testing thing, like public model handling, I think like we're going to find those problems a lot quicker than PP does. So...
Yeah...
It is hilarious that they did the public playtest trials, and then they're like, ah, you know what, we're just going to have open playtesting instead.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's not lazy open playtesting, and more so like actual, like, they listen to us and not try and make us design the game.
I also hope it's in addition instead of instead. Like, it would be nice if they still, the people who applied, if they find people they thought were good and say, all right, here's stuff coming down the line a few months from now,
mm-hmm.
and then after getting some feedback from them, then they go public and then get some more feedback from everybody, as opposed to just shit everything out there right away.
Yeah. Or have the echo chamber like tell them to what to fix, and then it ends up being not so great.
Or possibly have one person who has been wanting to be as part of that process forever and ever, and two people he can join with in that process for playtesting stuff. Go to a damn other city to playtest with somebody else.
Listen.
I don't think it's Nate that's bitter. I think it's Andy that's bitter.
It is.
Son of a bitch. I've been trying to...
I'm just sitting around. I'm, you know, watching TV. I'm jerking off. I'm doing whatever. And then I get a text from Trav, and he's like, hey, we're putting an application for playtest. And I'm like, cool. And then, like, 3 days later, I'm at War Machine, and Andy's like, hey, you want to do the playtest? I'm like, oops. That's how it was. Travis asked me first.
Nobody else in Madison wanted to do it besides you, me, and Dan.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And then Travis, of all people, knows.
They canceled the fucking thing anyway, yeah, so it doesn't matter.
I know. Hey, know. I'm good still, news, still Andy. Grumbly.
Hey, good news. We're going to get to playtest things together.
I'm happy that they're doing it. I'm optimistic that it'll work out. At the same time, I'm scared. Because I'm afraid of them putting something out and them just listening to the loudest voice of reason. Which, I know that was the biggest problem that they had with the actual open beta test for Mark II, is trying to weed out
right.
the unreasonable internet voice with actual constructive criticism and feedback.
Flip yeah. side, though, I think they did a good job. Yes. I think it was a nightmare for them, which Correct. Is why they didn't want to ever do it again.
Correct.
But they did a good enough job picking out the correct feedback that I'm not too worried about their ability to do it again. Now, I don't know how much of that was DC.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you know, I don't know with the new crew, like Little Billy and Pagani. I don't know how, if you know, different that is.
Well, I mean, at least with Pagani, from what I've seen, I mean, he's reasonable. So.
Anyway.
No, I think it'll be neat. I just think that I just lost my thought, but I do want the playtest to not replace development. And I know that here's what I was getting at. I know that when I sit there and say, well, if they just would have done X and Y, then it would have been perfect. But I am also not a developer, so I don't know how some of those things will ripple through, and it's going to be hard. It's got to be really hard to separate that stuff out. But if they execute it the way that they had previously done it, I feel like we'll still Mark III will become a better game because it feels just a little half baked.
I wonder if they're going to do it, because I always felt that the league models for the leagues have always been their version of a playtest.
Sure,
is that they put out as like, hey, we got Castigator. Well, let's just see if what happens if we put this other weird thing onto it and throw it out there in the wild and
yeah.
see if there's you know any kind of feedback on it. Now I think they're going to do that kind of same thing again. Of like, here's a model. We don't know if it's going to be, you know, good or not. Break it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throw it in lists. You know, play around with it. Let us know.
Well, in the sheer quantity. So, number one, Travis said something isn't going to happen, but I have no idea what he's saying isn't going to happen. So, that's fascinating. But something isn't going to happen.
Yes.
Which, by definition, means that something is going to happen. But anyway, so the sheer volume of people, like,
mm-hmm.
there shouldn't, I know there's the loudest voices thing, but even beyond that, there isn't really a vocal minority as much as you would think. Like, in general, most people kind of are reasonable about these things when they go out there. And so I think the problem with the models coming out just from internal is obvious things that just get missed because they play. We've talked about this before with game balance and stuff, is that they know how they want a model to play,
mm-hmm.
and so they don't break it. You know, they don't break shit. They don't see what happens if you play it wrong. They don't see what happens if you spam it. They don't see what happens if you abuse it. But once it hits the real world, people do that to it.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. almost so, like it's a certain people, that's their directive.
Right, which is great. You know, fine. You put it out there and somebody's like, well, what happens if I take 14 mad dogs? And then, oh, that shit happens, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or even not just that egregious, like enough people see it and go, well, you know, because of this model's actually terrible. Like if they had this one extra rat and then this word was different slightly, it would be reasonable. But it just, as is kind of fucked.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's just the sheer volume of people increases the number of people that see something and will catch these things.
Mm-hmm.
I had
also, we don't give a fuck about changing shit for fluff reasons, so you don't ruin Madrak 1 and overpower Madrak 2 because you think it's fluffy to switch their fucking feats. You broke one character and ruined another one because you think you're being cute.
Yeah. And you took Agreed. His axe away.
Like, their errata should have just been to switch their fucking feats back, and it would have fixed two casters in one swoop.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's where I get with the errata, there should have been a little bit more redesigning instead of tweaking, because when they tweak something, they have this false assumption that it was okay besides this just one little point that they had. But some of these, like Haley 1 probably could have used a redesign if temporal barrier was the focus of her work. Gatsby 2 probably needs a redesign instead of just tweaking some words to get him back out there.
He needs to go back to, like, he needs so much done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with, if Excarnate was forfeit action, and with the fact that he can't charge friendly models, he could have kept everything else.
Yeah.
He really could have.
I think it was a matter of them seeing things. It's what I was talking with somebody over Scorn over the when I was played with him on Wednesday, is they saw issues with Scorn.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, here's a couple of things that we're going to do.
Yeah.
And, okay, we're done. And didn't realize that, you know, taking all their beasts down by one fury and then taking away ability to give them free charges or things like that, it hurt them in that. And I don't think they saw that consequence until it hit the real world.
Well, I what they said, it was one of the Wills, I think it was Schick, who's insider, he talked about what happened to Scorn. It was an interesting point, which is they said they kind of did Scorn first when they were doing Mark III. And Scorn is fair and balanced, like, and not in a jokey Fox Newsy way. Like, Scorn is, but if you played in Mark One and you remember that trolls were fair, you also remember that trolls were terrible because of that. And he pointed out, like, and his specific example in there is that, is it overly strong when an enraged, you know, whatever, some other buff bronze back charges and wrecks two heavies in a single activation? It's fucking insanely powerful, but you know what it is? It's super fun, and so what? Like, if you have something's fun and insanely powerful, good. You know, if as long as everybody has stuff they're doing that's powerful and fun, that's fine. You know, it's just so Scorn has nothing insanely powerful in a world where everybody has at least one or two things that are insanely powerful, and not even just like this one caster's broke, but just like, you know, this is the shit we do, and so they just don't have an identity. They just kind of like fap about in circles and don't do anything impressive because they took away all their really cool toys.
Yeah.
Let a bronze back wreck two fucking heavies. Good for it. You know, if I let it get, if I have two heavies within 3 inches of each other in charge range of a bronze back while he still has his beast handlers alive and whatever, fucking go to town. Have fun.
Yeah. The only issue that I saw back then was the crazy Molokarn charge from downtown, you know.
Yep,
30-inch Molokarn was stupid. You know, that's fine. But they took away all of those things. Yep. They made sure not a single one of those things remained.
Yep. I feel like Crick's got a little bit of that treatment, too, and might need a helping hand like Scorn's getting right now. And then behind them, I feel like Trolls is just a little under the bar of everyone else. Like, Madrak was really holding the faction up, and the love for Ragnar was putting into it as well. But
oh man, Ragnar feet sluggers can go fuck itself.
Yeah, they're
Jesus.
Or Horgul.
I'm sorry. Horgul feet sluggers.
Yeah, they're, it's good.
Fuck.
Horgul's Mountain King is fantastic, but there's just those few things that are holding up the faction. Like, Trolls play a really, like, honest and simple game, but honest and simple isn't, like, what the game is about. And if they need to do that, they need to go back to, like, that early Mark II warder level of survivability.
Anybody? Have you
early Mark II, they didn't have warders.
I mean, the early Mark II warders. Like, when Mark
II early were version early of Mark II to Mark II.
Oh, okay.
The early, yeah. I haven't seen Kalandra in person in Mark 3, and she seems like she'd be the tricky, different, you know, play style, but...
It's just the things that they have are so confusing.
Fury 8? Fuck her.
Fury 8's a big deal. It's huge for her, and a 16-inch Starcross bubble is massive.
They didn't nerf Wrong Eye at all.
Yeah, I know. They let that stay.
I could not have... What? I thought for sure Submerge was going to go up to cost 2, so I'd have to pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I got a shield guard.
Yeah. I don't think that that is the most egregious thing in the game as well.
No, if there was one thing where they were like, we did not change this, and I would be, well, that's just stupid. It would probably not be Wrong Eye and Snapjaw.
No, but it was such an obvious thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Everyone was complaining about.
I know they intended to make that happen. Like, they wanted you to be able to star crossed and submerged, but I don't think they noticed the inherent power level of it.
Yeah.
I found it surprising that Una didn't get any.
That was, I was the not one surprised because
she was
say.
So brand new. That's she was so that. Brand new, I did not expect her to be touched.
Maybe Una didn't need to be touched, but the Griffins did. I mean, like, something needed to change.
They should have Prowl instead of Stealth is my stance.
I would agree with
I
that.
I think Prowl instead of Stealth. And people are like, every time I say that, people are like, and lose Long Leash. Nah, fuck it. They could keep Long Leash.
Yeah.
Let them have because it. That's
Una,
their gimmick.
The other thing, they could lose Long Leash, and then she Una could. 1 could make, have that as a Field Marshal, but maybe, then Una okay. 2 doesn't.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. Fuck it. Let him. I don't care. Yeah. Long Leash isn't what's broken about those guys. The fact mm-hmm. that I can't shoot them on their way in, and so let them have Prowl, so they have to kind of.
Yeah. If I can't actually shoot think. Them, if I can't shoot them and I can't hit them, then what do I do? I play Osram and bulldoze them away from my caster.
Well, my plan is to have double monitors and just true sight those fuckers off the board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's another way to do it.
Yeah.
When you've got good access to true sight.
Yep. Oh, well. We should probably move on to... Did we tweet for Z-Bill?
Yeah, I think the only...
tweeted that we were on there.
I think the only reason Amanda's watching is so she knows when she's going to get food.
My dog's probably waiting at home to pee. She's really good, though. She hasn't had any accents since she was a little pup.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I know that's a big milestone for dogs. A
couple days ago, we fell asleep without letting her out. Like, normally, we take her out in the morning, and then when I get home from work, I take her out, and then we take her out right before we go to bed, like at midnight, and then take her out in the morning. So she's about 8 hours, 8 hours between bathrooms, and got home from work, and then we took her out, and then doing stuff. Then we both just fell asleep, mm-hmm. and then we didn't wake up until, like, 6 the following morning. So she went, like, 13 hours without being let out. No accidents. Good puppy.
Nice.
She just tore up carpeting instead. What are you looking at?
Just looking at our stream is messing up.
No, we just look like that.
All right. So, yeah, I don't think we had anything special. There is one comment there. All right. So, our quick zappity grumble is, what would the tagline be for the movie of your life?
Wasted potential.
I
should
couldn't.
Be a fucking doctor by now.
Yeah, I don't think I could come up with one. My movie would be interesting, but I don't know. There we go. It would be interesting, but I don't know. That's my tagline.
Oh, you're just depressing me. Like, it's Requiem for a Dream Part 2, Depressing Boogaloo.
So does that, like, take us right into recommendations?
Nope. I still have to say mine. I'm looking it up here for a second.
So okay. I have an anti-recommendation while you're looking that up.
Oh.
I don't think I even have a real one. I'm going to go with the fucking anti-recommendation. So
my tagline of my life was,
ooh,
oh, goddamn it, ooh. It's not even, son of a bitch.
Ooh. Is that your tagline? Oh, God, oh, no, it's not stopping, son of a bitch. That actually is my new tagline for my life is, oh, God, oh, no, it's not stopping, son of a bitch. That just sums up life.
Yep.
Once upon a time, Geezy and I both recommended Mean Girls. Not Mean Girls. I kept fucking saying Mean Girls. Trapped?
Trapped in time, surrounded by evil, low on gas.
No, you got a lot of gas.
No,
that's a fart joke. Scream Queens. So
Scream Queens, yeah.
Brian Geezy and I recommended Scream Queens year and a half or so ago because it was fun if someone, it was a little flawed, a little rocky sometimes, but it was a clever show. It was a fun show. It was a show worth watching. Don't watch season 2. It is hot fucking garbage.
I enjoyed season 2.
Season 2. I liked Chanel number 3, as always, is the best part of that show, and everything else was just shit.
There was just some
garbage.
Weird. Towards 5
was
end.
Terrible. Everything Chanel number 5 related was terrible. Yeah. They didn't have the balance there. They would just be mean to her, and there was no punchline to it, and mm-hmm. it wasn't. And just, hey, let's introduce 4 characters and just have them die, and then we'll just do it again. And like, so they just, at least the first one, they introduced like all the pledges at the beginning, and then they just kind of got picked off. It's just like, we need new victims, and now they're dead again.
Yeah, they just kind of put the first one in. They took the groundwork of the first one, put the hospital over it, and then just kind of repeated the parts,
but they
again.
Repeated it worse, and like the killers weren't as interesting, spoiler killers plural, but like they weren't as interesting, and they didn't even save it, and it just was weak sauce. It was, if nothing else, I think it's would have to be kind of easy to agree that it's way worse than season 1.
I'll agree with that, but
it's
there were
whether it's
there were experiences that were good.
I mean, there were scenes, maybe even one scene per episode that I enjoyed, but overall, like, I would have just rather have spent 10 hours of my life watching anything else.
Some of the costume party Trump jokes were really good.
Yeah. I mean, there was some, like, there was some decent stuff in each episode.
Yeah.
But if you're going to watch 10 hours of television because each hour has 5 minutes of amusement, it's just not enough.
Yeah.
It felt like a really weak.
Or if you like the idea of it, I mean, that's another one, too. But it was not the OA, so.
No, I do not recommend. If you got nothing else to watch, but you know what? There's plenty of other things to watch.
That's I guess that'll bleed into my recommendation of things not to do, and it is do not finish the OA if you started watching it because I told you to. Do not finish. Episode 4 and done. That's it. Just stop there and abandon ship. It's not worth finishing. It's garbage. Just terrible.
Should I even watch the first 4 then?
And if you like, if you want to
recant your old recommendation,
if you feel like the first, if you want like, if you want to build, if you want to build a story,
yeah.
After four episodes go by, then sure, you can go with it and just think that what would happen would be really cool, but that thing that you think would happen doesn't.
So I could, if I wanted to use it like as a creative kickstart, like where it's like, oh, you know, it's like those writer workshops where they give you like a one sentence thing and you're supposed to build a story off of it. So I should watch the 4 episodes if and only if I want to make the next great American novel and I want to use the idea that I come up with off of this.
Exactly. Watch the first 4 episodes and then come up with a better OA ending. But on the flip side of that, it looks like a good recommendation, just as a two-parter, would be that the War Machine and Horde's Battle Reporter went live on Google Play Store last week or early this week. And I've been trying. I'm not big for New Year's resolutions. I think they're kind of worthless. But one thing I am trying to do is log every single game that I play into the War Machine and Horde's Battle Reporter. They do gather a lot of statistics on it. They might not be the best because it's self-reporting, but it's fantastic. They use it to just show, like, of the people who are using it, the rankings of the casters, and you can break it down by skill level and whether it was a casual game or an event. Like, they put a lot of granularity into it so you can try and get to what you want faster or easier, or more, have the data can be more true. But I would recommend downloading that on your phone if you're not on an Apple platform, which I think they're trying to do.
Is it Iron Grudge is no longer viable?
Iron Grudge still exists, but this is much more techie. Okay. So Iron Grudge keeps track of your games for your purposes.
Mm-hmm. This
puts it, yep, everybody's results are in there.
So, I mean, you don't have to look at it, but it's, you know, for the people who want that kind of shit.
Because when I open it up, I get just a quick view of what I play or what I've played. My top casters, like the win-loss ratio for them. And then if I scroll down, which factions do I play the most? And then I can take a look at my recent games. You can, even when you go into these, find, if you feel like putting it in, you can list out your entire list or what theme it was in, how you won, who you played against, if they have this as well. So it's just it's a fun little thing. And they do have an ELO score in there.
I'm 0-2 in 2017, so that's a little depressing.
Well, and see, that's where you get some of the problems with self-reporting, is that people are more likely to report the games they win because they're more excited about them than having to go through and recant, well, here's how I lost because the fucking Striker earthquaked me because I was stupid.
I was like 20-1 in December and in November. Like, I was on a winning streak. The only loss I had was that one against Zach.
Well, there's nowhere to go but up.
I was doing amazing, and then this year I'm 0-2.
Nowhere to go but up.
Nice thing about
quitting a faction for it. Well, not really. I haven't played my Convergence in like literally 2 years. I feel I should.
Yeah, just pull them out, and then once you get that out of your system, you can switch back into minions.
The nice part about the NAF, if you don't know, the NAF is the Blood Bowl kind of community-based thing that's similar to that. TOs do all the reporting for it.
That's another thing in here.
So it doesn't matter if you win or anything like that. You have a specific username with the NAF, and you just get reported in.
The other thing in this, too, that since Andy brought it up, is that as a TO, you can log in results from tournaments as well. I haven't tried it yet because I haven't run any this year, but there's just a lot of functionality to it, and I think the people who made it, they put a lot of time and effort into it, and I think if enough people start using it, we can start mining some really good data.
Yeah, the only issue is then you have some people who only ever use that data.
Yeah, well. I know. There's and some then, there's
and
flaws. The,
and we already know that and tournament players
gospel. Yeah.
Yeah, tournament players is still a small subsect of exactly. all the overall War Machine players.
They're just more vocal.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a small section of War Machine players, and I don't want that to be the overall voice of it. Is
right.
No, but a lot of us are statistical nerds, so it's just like hilarious. Being able to see all that is cool.
It would be hilarious to see. I mean, obviously, not everybody's using it, so it would depend on skill as well. But hypothetically, if everybody on the planet had this app, it would be funny to see the number of wins that got entered versus the number of losses that got entered, because mathematically at that point it should be identical.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think like 90% of the entered games would be wins instead of losses.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that too.
It's like, oh, well, that's interesting. Like somehow like a tournament was played and everybody won every game.
Yep.
Well, basically the people doing the entering are the only ones winning.
Right, yeah.
The loser would still get a strike on their account because of the placement there. But you can definitely tell.
Oh, you're right. Like if when you report, it would have to count as a win and a loss because you would put in who you played against.
Yeah, as long as they had an ID or something that you could put in, because you can plug in the ID and it will populate to their account if they have one. So it's just a cool little tool that's worth downloading.
Lazy H0B0 is on our Twitch chat. Good for you, Lazy H0B0.
Get the camera. Oh,
I refuse to pronounce Leet speak. Oh, I still call one of my favorite movies Sisevenen. Because if you're going to spell your name stupidly, no offense, Lazy H0B0, I'm not calling you stupid, but David Fincher I'm calling stupid, because your movie's called Seven, so use a fucking V. Mm-hmm. Not Sisevenen.
Mm-hmm. My recommendation is that you should play some Diablo 3 before the seasonal event ends, which is the 20th anniversary of Diablo. It's really cool. So what they do is you go back to visit Tristram.
Yep.
And they have a filter put in place where it makes all of your characters look pixelated.
Yeah.
But it still uses the normal engine for Diablo 3. You guys look all pixelated, and you only walk in 8 degrees.
Yep.
of there. Ran through there twice once with a friend in co-op and once by solo, because in order for you to get an achievement, you have to defeat the Dark Lord solo in order to get your own like little baby butcher pet.
I want a baby butcher pet.
Yeah, so you got to beat it by yourself.
You can get a cow pet, too.
You can get a cow pet, yep. And that takes 1,000,000 gold.
1,000,000 gold.
It takes 1,000,000 gold to make the item to get the cow pet, and it takes a ton of gold to raise... You have to raise people up, I believe. No, you have to raise somebody up. I think you're...
Whatever.
Craftsman up to level 10.
Sure.
Otherwise, Diablo 3, again, new season started recently. It's still incredibly fun. I like playing a season in there, get my cool rewards, and then quit playing for 3 months.
As long as the Diablo Blizzard event eventually warps into Overwatch skins, I'll be okay. But right now, I'm just getting player icons.
Yeah,
and sprays.
Yeah, you just get some sprays.
I'm just annoyed that it's temporary. Mm. I'm annoyed about everything being temporary in video games now.
Well, that's
I can plug Legend of Zelda into my NES and it's the same fucking game it was 30 years ago, yep. Right? But now with
events,
and skins, stuff. And events and DLCs and all that shit, it's not there.
It's just the warping of the industry. But
I know.
I get the. I know that. Several people get very sad when they see the Soldier 76 golf pose that they can't get anymore because the Summer Olympic Games events for Overwatch were not as highly followed as the Christmas or Halloween ones.
Yeah. No, I've got a couple of those too. Yeah, for that event, I think it would be something that you could pay for. Because, I mean, Summer Olympics aren't going to happen for another 2 years. Who knows what we're going to be playing Overwatch in another... No, it's 4 years but from even now. Summer Olympics.
I don't know.
But, I mean...
The server-based things also fucks with stuff. Like, if I want to... Maybe I just want to play the launch version of Diablo 3. I just can't. Mm-hmm. Ever again. For all of human history.
Yep.
Right? You know? And it's just...
It builds up that exclusivity, so you run to the game. I mean, it's just the world that the video gaming industry's created.
To be perfectly honest, I would say that the newest... The more this version of Diablo that we're playing now is far superior than the launch version.
Well, I can't have a wizard stay in Archon mode for infinite time if I'm skilled enough anymore because they changed how Archon works.
You also can't.
But and that's whether it's better or worse isn't the point, right? Because like you can have Warhammer's Fantasy Battle tournaments where you play with 4th edition cards, you know, or not cards. You get what I mean? Like it's a thing that people can do. With physical games, like, because the stuff stays out there. It's just games as they are now, like, it changes and you can, it's gone. It's from the universe, it ceases to exist. And imagine if that's how it was with older stuff, like with the classics. And it's like, oh man, I love Chrono Trigger, but the version I played, they just changed it. Frog's not in anymore. They changed Frog out and now there's a different guy. What?
You know? Frogs are offensive.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, or they took away Luminaire from Chrono and gave him a different spell instead. And it just, it's different now.
Yep, the experiential.
And it makes me sad sometimes.
Mm. No, I understand where you're coming from.
I just don't know why we're losing frames. Is
I don't know either. But especially since, you know, if you do the consider as art thing, it's like not being able to get when they edit a book and you can't get the original version of the book yet. Like, they don't paint over the Mona Lisa and say, well, this is the version now.
The one things I don't like about Overwatch is the holiday ones where they change, like, one of the battle boards. And their designers spent a lot of time Halloweening up Hollywood or King's Row for the Christmas event. They spent a lot of time building that zone, adding on all the texture effects to make everything look holiday-esque. And it's only used for a couple weeks.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's it. Like, the Halloween one for Hollywood is awesome. And I wish that map was still in effect.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, play Diablo before it ends.
Yeah, maybe I'll go home and do that now. But I don't have. I'm annoyed because I have two different accounts, and one of the accounts I don't have a million gold because of the 7th time I bought Diablo 3.
See, I only did that with Diablo 2. Bought Diablo 3 once, and that was it.
Do you not play with Amanda at all?
She bought her own.
Oh well, see, okay. That wasn't a possibility with mine. I mean, we linked bank accounts because we're married, so I don't know who you say bought it, but my household has purchased 7 copies of Diablo 3.
Yeah, Amanda and I are still separate accounts, so.
Cool beans.
That's life.
All right.
Whatever. We like to kind of peter out. All right, and I'll say lazy hobo just to make a listener happy.
Now he can put that on his phone as an answering machine message or a voicemail message.
Yeah, that's the Carl Castle prize from Don't Tell Me Here.
I think J-Rock did that from Trailer Park Boys. If you donated $50 to a food bank over the holidays, he would send you a personalized voicemail message.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Speaking of people like the Trailer Park Boys, you know the Dudesons? They're like a Finnish version of Jackass.
Mm-hmm.
One of those guys does the voice for Uncle Death in Let It Die, which I didn't realize. I thought he had a Mexican accent. It turns out it's a Finnish accent. And apparently Mexicans and Finns sound similar if you're an ignorant American.
I guess so.
That's all I got.
All right.
Have a good night, folks. Or day, whatever.